Chapter 20. Every drop of blood quivered in the young patrician at sight of her. He forgot the crowd, the old man, his own astonishment at the incomprehensible things which he had heard. He saw only her. At last, after all his efforts, after long days of alarm, trouble, and suffering, he had found her. For the first time he realized that joy might rush at the heart, like a wild beast, and squeeze it till breath was lost. He, who had supposed hitherto that on Ortuna had been imposed a kind of duty, to accomplish all his wishes, hardly bejeweled his own eyes now, and his own happiness. Were it not for that disbelief, his passionate nature might have urged him to some unconsidered step. But he wished to convince himself first that that was not the continuation of those miracles with which his head was filled, and that he was not dreaming. But there was no doubt, he saw Lygia, and an interval of barely a few steps divided them. She stood in perfect light, so that he could rejoice in the sight of her as much as he liked. The hood had fallen from her head, and disheveled her hair. Her mouth was open slightly, her eyes raised toward the apostle, her face fixed in listening and delighted. She was dressed in a dark woolen mantle, like a daughter of the people, but never had Vinicius seen her more beautiful. And notwithstanding all the disorder which had risen in him, he was struck by the nobility of that wonderful patrician head in distinction to the dress, almost that of a slave. Love flew over him like a flame, immense, mixed with a marvelous feeling of yearning, homage, honor, and desire. He felt the delight which the sight of her caused him. He drank of her, as of life-giving water after long thirst. Standing near the gigantic Lygian, she seemed to him smaller than before, almost a child. He noticed, too, that she had grown more slender. Her complexion had become almost transparent. She made on him the impression of a flower, and a spirit. But all the more did he desire to possess that woman, so different from all women whom he had seen or possessed in Rome or the Orient. He felt that for her, he would have given them all, and with them Rome and the world in addition. He would have lost himself in gazing, and forgotten himself altogether, had it not been for Shiloh, who pulled the corner of his mantle, out of fear, that he might do something to expose them to danger. Meanwhile the Christians began to pray and sing. After a while Maranatha thundered forth, and then the great apostle baptized with water from the fountain those whom the press spiders presented as ready for baptism. It seemed to Vinicius that that night would never end. He wished now to follow Lygia as soon as possible, and seize her on the road, or at her house. At last some began to leave the cemetery, and Shiloh whispered, "Let us go out before the gate, Lord, we have not removed our hoods, and people look at us." Such was the case, for during the discourse of the apostle all had cast aside their hoods so as to hear better, and they had not followed the general example. Shiloh's advice seemed wise, therefore. Standing before the gate, they could look at all who passed. Ursus it was easy to recognize by his form and size. "Let us follow them," said Shiloh. "We shall see to what house they go. Tomorrow, or rather today, thou wilt surround the entrances with slaves and take her." "No," said Vinicius. "What dost thou wish to do, Lord?" "We will follow her to the house, and take her now, if thou wilt undertake that task, Croton." "I will," replied Croton, "and I will give myself to thee as a slave, if I do not break the back of that bison who is guarding her." But Shiloh fell to dissuading and entreating them by all the gods not to do so. Croton was taken only if for cliff fence against attack in case they were recognized, not to carry off the girl. To take her when there were only two of them was to expose themselves to death, and, what was worse, they might let her out of their hands, and then she would hide in another place or leave Rome. And what could they do? Why not act with certainty? Why expose themselves to destruction and the whole undertaking to failure? Though Vinicius restrained himself with the greatest effort from seizing Lygia in his arms at once, right there in the cemetery, he felt that the Greek was right, and would have lent ear, perhaps, to his counsels, had it not been for Croton, to whom reward was the question. "Lord," Command that old goat to be silent, said he, or let me drop my fist on his head. Once in Buxentum, whither Lucius Saturnius took me to a play, 7 drunken gladiators fell on me at an inn, and none of them escaped with sound ribs. I do not say to take the girl now from the crowd, for they might throw stones before our feet, but once she is at home I will seize her, carry her away, and take her whithersoever thou shalt indicate. Vinicius was pleased to hear those words, and answered, Thus let it be, by Hercules. Tomorrow we may not find her at home. If we surprise them they will remove the girl surely. This legend seems tremendously strong, groaned Chio. No one will ask thee to hold his hands, answered Croton. But they had to wait long yet, and the cocks had begun to crow before dawn, when they saw Ursus coming through the gate, and with him Lygia. They were accompanied by a number of other persons. It seemed to Chilo that he recognized among them the great apostle. Next to him walked another old man, considerably lower in stature, 2 women who were not young, and a boy, who lighted the way with a lantern. After that handful followed a crowd, about 200 in number. Vinicius, Chio, and Croton walked with these people. Yes, Lord, said Chio, thy maiden is under powerful protection. That is the great apostle with her, for see how passing people kneel to him. People did in fact kneel before him, but Vinicius did not look at them. He did not lose Lygia from his eyes for a moment. He thought only of bearing her away, and, accustomed as he had been in wars to stratagems of all sorts, he arranged in his head the whole plan of seizure with soldierly precision. He felt that the step on which he had decided was bold, but he knew well that bold attacks give success generally. The way was long, hence at moments he thought too of the gulf which that wonderful religion had dug between him and Lygia. Now he understood everything that had happened in the past, and why it had happened. He was sufficiently penetrating for that. Lygia he had not known hitherto. He had seen in her a maiden wonderful beyond others, a maiden toward whom his feelings were inflamed. He knew now that her religion made her different from other women, and his hope that feeling, desire, wealth, luxury, would attract her, he knew now to be a vain illusion. Finally he understood this, which he and Petronius had not understood, that the new religion engrafted into the soul something unknown to that world in which he lived, and that Lygia, even if she loved him, would not sacrifice any of her Christian truths for his sake, and that, if pleasure existed for her, it was a pleasure different altogether from that which he, and Petronius and Caesar's court and all Rome were pursuing. Every other woman whom he knew might become his mistress, but that Christian would become only his victim. And when he thought of this, he felt anger and burning pain, for he felt that his anger was powerless. To carry off Lygia seemed to him possible. He was almost sure that he could take her, but he was equally sure that, in view of her religion, he himself with his bravery was nothing, that his power was nothing, and that through it, he could effect nothing. That Roman military tribune, convinced that the power of the sword, and the fist which had conquered the world, would command it forever, saw for the first time in life, that beyond that power there might be something else. Hence he asked himself with amazement what it was. And he could not answer distinctly. Through his head, flew merely pictures of the cemetery, the assembled crowd, and Lygia, listening with her whole soul to the words of the old man, as he narrated the passion, death, and resurrection of the God-man, who had redeemed the world, and promised it happiness on the other shore of the Styx. When he thought of this, chaos rose in his head. But he was brought out of this chaos by Chilo, who fell to lamenting his own fate. He had agreed to find Lygia. He had sought for her in peril of his life, and he had pointed her out. But what more do they want? Had he offered to carry the maiden away? Who could ask anything like this of a maimed man deprived of 2 fingers, an old man, devoted to meditation, to science, and virtue? What would happen, were a lord of such dignity as Vinicius to meet some mishap, while bearing the maiden away? It is true, that the gods are bound, to to watch over their chosen ones. But of not such things happened more than once, as if the gods were playing games instead of watching what was passing in the world. Fortune is blindfold, as is well known, and does not see even in daylight. What must the case be at night? Let something happen. Let that legion bear hurl a millstone at the noble Vinicius, or a keg of wine, or, still worse, water. Who will give assurance that instead of a reward, blame will not fall on the hapless Chio? He, the poor sage, has attached himself to the noble Vinicius as Aristotle to Alexander of Macedon. If the noble lord should give him at least that purse which he had thrust into his girdle before leaving home, there would be something with which to invocate in case of need, or to influence the Christians. Oh, why not listen to the counsels of an old man, counsels dictated by experience and prudence? Vinicius, hearing this, took the purse from his belt, and threw it to the fingers of Chilo. Thou hast it, be silent. The Greek felt that it was unusually heavy, and gained confidence. My whole hope is in this, said he, that Hercules or Theseus perform deeds still more arduous. What is my personal, nearest friend, Croton, if not Hercules? Thee, worthy lord, I will not call a demigod, for thou art a full god, and in future thou wilt not forget a poor, faithful servant, whose needs it will be necessary to provide for from time to time, for once he is sunk in books, he thinks of nothing else. Sonic few stadia of garden land and a little house, even with the smallest portico, for coolness in summer, would befit such a donor. Meanwhile I shall admire thy heroic deeds from afar, and invoke Jove to befriend thee, and if need be I will make such an outcry, that half Rome will be roused to thy assistance. What a wretched, rough road! The olive oil is burned out in the lantern. And if Croton, who is as noble as he is strong, would bear me to the gate in his arms, he would learn, to begin with, whether he will carry the maiden easily. Second, he would act like Aeneas, and win all the good gods to such a degree, that touching the result of the enterprise I should be thoroughly satisfied. I should rather carry a sheep which died of mange a month ago, answered the gladiator. But give that purse, bestowed by the worthy tribune, and I will bear thee to the gate. Mayst thou knock the great toe from thy foot, replied the Greek. What profit hast thou from the teachings of that worthy old man, who described poverty and charity as the two foremost virtues? Has he not commanded thee expressly to love me? Never shall I make thee, I see, even a poor Christian. It would be easier for the son to pierce the walls of the Mamertine prison than for truth, to penetrate thy skull of a hippopotamus. Never fear, said Croton, who with the strength of a beast, had no human feeling. I shall not be a Christian. I have no wish to lose my bread. But if thou knew even the rudiments of philosophy, thou wouldst know that gold is vanity. Come to me with thy philosophy. I will give thee one blow of my head in the stomach. We shall see then who wins. An ox might have said the same to Aristotle, retorted Chilo. It was growing gray in the world. The dawn covered with pale light the outlines of the walls, the trees along the wayside, the buildings, and the gravestones scattered here and there began to issue from the shade. The road was no longer quite empty. Marketmen were moving toward the gates, leading asses and mules laden with vegetables. Here and there moved creaking carts in which game was conveyed. On the road, and along both sides of it was a light mist at the very earth, which promised good weather. People at some distance seemed like apparitions in that mist. Vinicius stared at the slender form of Lygia, which became more silvery as the light increased. Lord, said Chio, I should offend thee were I to foresee the end of thy bounty, but now, when thou hast paid me, I may not be suspected of speaking for my own interest only. I advise thee once more to go home for slaves and a litter, when thou hast learned in what house the divine Lygia dwells. Listen not to that elephant trunk, Croton, who undertakes to carry off the maiden, only to squeeze thy purse, as if it were a bag of curds. I have a blow of the fist, to be struck between the shoulders, which means that thou wilt perish, said Croton. I have a cask of Cephalonian wine, which means that I shall be well, answered Chio. Vinicius made no answer, for he approached the gate, at which a wonderful sight struck his eyes. Two soldiers knelt when the apostle was passing. Peter placed his hand on their iron helmets for a moment, and then made the sign of the cross on them. It had never occurred to the patrician before that there could be Christians in the army. With astonishment he thought that as fire in a burning city takes in more and more houses, so to all appearances, that doctrine embraces new souls every day, and extends itself over all human understandings. This struck him also with reference to Lydia, for he was convinced that, had she wished to flee from the city, there would be guards willing to facilitate her flight. He thanked the gods then, that this had not happened. After they had passed vacant places beyond the wall, the Christians began to scatter. There was need, therefore, to follow Lydia more from a distance, and more carefully, so as not to rouse attention. Chilo felt a complaining of wounds, of pains in his legs, and dropped more and more to the rear. Vinicius did not oppose this, judging that the cowardly and incompetent Greek would not be needed. He would even have permitted him to depart, had he wished, but the worthy sage was detained by circumspection. Curiosity pressed him evidently, since he continued behind, and at moments even approached with his previous counsels. He thought, too, that the old man accompanying the apostle might be Glaucus, were it not for his rather low stature. They walked a good while before reaching the Trans-Tiber, and the sun was near rising, when the group surrounding Lydia dispersed. The apostle, an old woman, and a boy went up the river, the old man of lower stature, Ursus, and Lydia entered a narrow vicus, and, advancing still about 100 yards, went into a house in which were two shops, one for the sale of olives, the other for poultry. Chilo, who walked about 50 yards behind Vinicius and Croton, halted all at once, as if fixed to the earth, and, squeezing up to the wall, began to hiss at them to turn. They did so, for they needed to take counsel. Go, Chio, said Vinicius, and see if this house fronts on another street. Chio, though he had complained of wounds in his feet, sprang away as quickly as if he had had the wings of J. Tilda Ercury on his ankles, and returned in a moment. No, said he, there is but one entrance. Then, putting his hands together, he said, I implore thee, Lord, by Jupiter, Apollo, Vesta, Cybel, Isis, Osiris, Mithra Baal, and all the gods of the Orient and the Occident to drop this plan. Listen to me, but he stopped on a sudden, for he saw that Vinicius's face was pale from emotion, and that his eyes were glittering like the eyes of a wolf. It was enough to look at him to understand that nothing in the world would restrain him from the undertaking. Croton began to draw air into his Herculean breast, and to sway his undeveloped skull from side to side as bears do when confined in a cage, but on his face not the least fear was evident. I will go in first, said he. Thou wilt follow me, said Vinicius, in commanding tones. And after a while both vanished in the dark entrance. Chilo sprang to the corner of the nearest alley and watched from behind it, waiting for what would happen. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.